Workplaces are now seeking individuals who are good with people. Therefore, you should develop your emotional skills. In this article, Professor Timo Vuori explains why it pays to learn emotional skills, and creative workers tell why an atmosphere of dialogue and an empathetic working life is good business. Written by Rhea Taratu, read by Gregory Howiter. A message from a colleague at the end of the day. Once again, I messed up. Can you go and talk to M tomorrow? In the message, the colleague explains that he gave a team who had worked round the clock to get a project finish some rather tough critical feedback. The team feels that the timing of this feedback was, to put it mildly, terrible. After exhausting themselves to get the job done, they were told they were useless, or at least worse than their competitors. I'm really irritated too. Patching up bad management takes a hell of a lot of time. The next day, I talked to M, who was so frustrated that they even mentioned resigning. But we talk through the situation, the emotional turmoil subsides, and we all learn something about ourselves and our way of dealing with different emotional states. Years later, I tell Timo Vuori, associate professor at Aalto University, about this. Vuori has studied emotional skills and their role in organizations. He seems to understand the dynamics of the chain of events, but he doesn't condemn my colleague. He says it's a good thing that the person who forgot to use their psychological eye realized what they had done. It makes it possible to address the issue. Emotional skills involve being able to recognize feelings and use them in your work, says Vuori. When I admit that even after all these years, I still get worked up when I think of the situation I described, Vuori says this shows how much power emotions have in working life. And this is why we're talking about them now more than ever. The following example effectively illustrates this change in attitude. Emotional skills are no longer considered soft skills. They're now a solid part of the core of leadership. Social skills have become valuable currency in the job market. The term EQ, emotional intelligence, is often used in connection with emotional skills. Leadership guides and training courses have raised empathy, interaction skills, self-reflection, and getting along with people from different backgrounds to the top of the list. These are all social skills, and leaders, in particular, need to be good with people. This principle has also started to show in recruitment. When the Harvard Business Review examined data on 5,000 managerial-level job descriptions from 2000 to 2017, it found that companies were looking for managers with profiles that were distinctly different from those required in the past. CEO job advertisements in particular emphasized the three S's as well as technical and business skills. Strong social skills. Although the Harvard Business Review used executive search and leadership advisory firm Russell Reynolds data to examine the changing requirements of managers, the authors of the article point out that it is not only senior management positions that require social skills. At all employment levels, more and more jobs today require highly developed social skills. Harvard's professor David Deming, among others, has demonstrated that these jobs have grown at a faster rate than that of the labor market as a whole, and that compensation for them is growing faster than average. How did this situation come about? Why has the age of digitalization and artificial intelligence affected work so much that we now need individuals who are good with people? Vuori claims that one of the reasons for this change is precisely the development of technical solutions. A machine can take care of processes, but a human must take care of people. Working life has taken giant technological leaps and gone beyond certain boundaries, and social skills, in particular, have become bottlenecks, says Vuori. For example, a single interaction can ruin the outcome of a major technical project if it is miscommunicated to employees or to the boss. The nature of social situations magnifies errors. We also live in a world of wicked problems and interdependencies. workplaces are looking for solutions to complex problems that require focused thinking. You can't get this kind of work done if you are in an irritated state of mind, Vuori says. Many of the changes in the business environment are testing our emotional skills. Work is done in multi-professional teams. An uncertain future horizon requires you to adapt, make quick changes, prioritize, and clarify common objectives. Even in situations that require crisis communication, it doesn't hurt if management is good at reading social situations and acting wisely in public. Emotions hold power in workplaces, whether one likes it or not. Aalto EE's senior advisor, Ben Notnagel, leads the personal development process for Aalto Executive MBA participants. According to Notnagel, understanding and managing emotions is essential for relationships, decision-making, and performance. If you want your team to get work done, you need to know how to empathize, build loyalty, promote belonging, and then motivate and possibly inspire them to reach ambitious personal and organizational goals. This, of course, requires the skill of paying attention to moments that impact performance and relationships, both at the office and at home. Vuori also talks about how atmosphere, emotions, recognizing and regulating them, has a crucial influence on cooperation and how smoothly it functions. In a respectful, safe team, people talk openly. Everyone gets the information that is essential for their work, and it becomes easier to get things done. Everyone's attitude matters, but the role of the team leader is crucial. If the team leader reacts constructively to mistakes, shows appreciation, addresses poor behavior, and, above all, gives good feedback, the team will find it easier to work together and commit common goals. So, we talk about emotions because they have a fundamental impact on how individuals, teams, and organizations behave. And we talk about emotional skills because they have a direct impact on the performance of a company or organization. Vuori claims that emotional skills can be learned. Emotions can be used to promote good, but they can also lead to conflict. Big fights often start from tiny things. Vuori became interested in the role of emotions in leadership at a young age. He was coaching a women's ice hockey team and realized that, although his technical expertise in the game was first rate, his message didn't always seem to get through. At that time, it was common in youth hockey for coaches to shout at and even ridicule their players. It was believed that this encouraged better performance. Today, we know better. If you want results, you have to think and encourage, says Vuori. Sometimes it's the simplest of things. You can shout, "Hey, shut the hatch," to the players from the box. Or you can do it more politely. "Could you shut the hatch, please?" Both ways get rid of the danger of an open hatch, but the more friendly request doesn't irritate or intimidate the players. They retain their sense of control and are able to focus on their own performance. This example may seem small, even insignificant, but it's precisely in everyday situations like this that emotions rise to the surface. Many people recognize the importance of these small moments at home, whether it's in a relationship, a sibling quarrel, or a conflict between a parent and a child. Big fights often start from tiny things. The dynamics of interactions aren't easy to interpret, and they're especially difficult when it comes to your own behavior. Quite often, you feel that you've behaved normally, while others get worked up, are oversensitive, get offended, talk over you, don't listen, or even start an argument. An outsider has a different perception of the situation than the person themselves, Vuori points out. So, asking colleagues for their views on your behavior is actually brave. For example, 360 evaluations help each individual look in the mirror at themselves, as well as through the eyes of others. This kind of assessment is like a thermometer. It tells you whether or not you're okay. It also reveals whether your assessment of the situation is the same as that of the thermometer. What if the assessment reveals that colleagues find many things that need improvement? A nice way of criticizing? The cure is to start paying attention to interactions, says Vuori. You have to admit that you feel emotions. You have to recognize them and how they affect your actions. This enables you to ask others how they feel about a certain situation. Developing emotional skills requires self-reflection. A simple example. Professor Vuori instructs a manager to take a few minutes each day to think about the emotional reactions some situations caused within themselves and others, and what the consequences were. Differences between generations are also evident in emotional skills. Generational differences are often raised when we discuss emotions. The basic formula is simple. Younger people are better at talking about feelings than older people. In Finland, at least, children learn friend-making skills, participate in feelings circles, and practice settling disputes already at kindergarten age. Millennials are on a whole different level when it comes to emotional skills, says Vuori. You can see this at workplaces, not only in how emotions are expressed more, but also in how social skills are valued. It's beginning to feel a bit embarrassing if you don't know or understand emotional talk. Timo Vuori trains experts and managers in the role of emotional skills in organizations. What would he say to a team leader who would like to better take emotions into account in his own team? Vuori suggests discussing emotions on the basis of a written questionnaire, for example. The issues to discuss can be simple. What things frustrate you? What motivates you in your current job and the way in which you do your work? Just basic things like this, Vuori says. They allow us to talk about issues and situations that we can try to improve at work, and, on the other hand, things that cause constant frustration. And here's the important point. Most of the problems, the irritation and frustration, for example, are because things really are done in a senseless way. This gets on people's nerves, and the solution isn't an adult feeling circle for venting anger. The solution is to fix the actual issue. If IT isn't working properly, sending people to an occupational psychologist won't help, Vuori claims. Supervisory work often involves pointless meetings. Meetings have useless agendas, we create unnecessary reports, and we're given the wrong tools. All this causes frustration and conflicts. It's respectful to everyone not to demand pointless things of people at work. It seems as if Vuori is speaking, at least partly, from his own experience at university. Emotions don't have power only in workplace break rooms or during spare time. They also sit in executive teams and strategy meetings. Still today, some people may think that social skills, emotional intelligence included, are something you only pay attention to when the more important things have been taken care of. First work, then emotions. Or business first, people after. Or figures first, and only then such luxuries as good management, effective interactions, and an open atmosphere. So, let's underline the basic point once more. Emotions affect the results of an organization. They're not something separate from, say, business or strategy-related issues. We'll take Nokia as a practical example. Vuori and his colleague, Kui N. Wi, from INSEAD University, have published several articles on Nokia's leadership style. For example, they have analyzed the rise and fall of Nokia's mobile phone business from 2005 to 2010. Still in 2007, Nokia was the market leader and was seen as an innovative, agile player. Apple's iPhone had a negligible 5% market share at this point. In only a few years, however, this situation had turned on its head, and eventually, Nokia not only lost to Apple, but abandoned the entire mobile phone business. What happened? Vuori has interviewed around 180 people who've worked in Nokia's senior and middle management. It seems that the climate of fear in the company contributed to Nokia's downward spiral. Vuori claims that when the external threat began to intensify and competition became fiercer, Nokia put its head in the sand and didn't dare face the fact that the way things were going, they wouldn't be the biggest and the best in the mobile phone business for much longer. In the interviews, the managers described how things were so difficult on the emotional level in the organization that the middle management didn't want to share bad news with the senior management. Such news was not well received. No one wanted to face the truth. Senior management, on the other hand, created unrealistic expectations because it felt good. A negative emotional climate can have very negative effects on a company. For example, fear can be a barrier to renewal, innovation, and quick reactions to a changing market. It also prevents open discussions of problems. Vuori says that lessons were learned from Nokia's failure. Before selling the telephone business, the company did some emotional regulation. The aim was to create a safer atmosphere in which to talk about difficult issues. Continuing in the phone business would have been nice on the emotional level, but consciously working on emotions enabled us to make the contrary decision. In Vuori's view, Nokia's leaders were enlightened about the importance of emotions. They realized that the previous phase had gone wrong because emotions had taken over. Vuori repeatedly raises the importance of the authenticity of emotions. Faking takes energy, and it's easy to get caught out. How, then, can you use emotions if you have to be genuine? According to Vuori, it's about learning to recognize genuine emotions and responding to them in a humane way. Take the example of change negotiations. Some people in the workplace will lose their jobs. Everyone is worried. The atmosphere isn't helped by managers pretending to be enthusiastic or telling employees in an info bulletin how results will be even better from now on because there are fewer people. It's a misconception that the communication should always be positive, says Vuori. People often think you have to spin everything in a positive way and that saying negative things out loud is a bad thing. Management should create an atmosphere in which even difficult issues can be discussed. To be genuine, if you involve people in workplace changes, you should do it properly. You can give people boundaries and ask them to stay within these when thinking about how to do things. If employees are left feeling that this could have been done more sensibly if they had at least been asked, it's frustrating for them. But negative emotions can also be helpful. The fear of losing your job can make you learn new skills. Jealousy can encourage you to achieve something you envy in another person. Being angry can help you to think about how to open up more. I've written many things about using the power of anger and criticism, says Vuori. Even grief can turn into something positive. It can help you let go, retreat into yourself, and think about what really matters to you. Vuori sums up the power of emotional skills like this, for better or for worse. Emotions are like fire. They contain energy that can either destroy things or enable radical progress and superior performance. A generation that doesn't tolerate a culture of silence and hushing is entering the workforce. It's a challenge to hone self-leadership and social skills on your own, says Anu Rautanen from design and marketing agency Works. The work culture of Works and Bengari, which share the same premises, emphasizes the importance of community, to the point where there are no bosses. Hierarchy kills creativity, says Anu Rautanen, people and culture specialist at Works. Works has developed a model that avoids bosses and hierarchies. The traditional setup of a creative director hinders personal growth, compelling people to act and choose according to what serves individual careers. The thinking at Works is that everyone is each other's creative director. The most common criticism of non-hierarchical organizations is perhaps that without a formal structure, an informal one takes over, granting power to the loudest and most power-hungry individuals. Rautanen is well aware of this argument. She talks about social hierarchies that are always present regardless of the organizational model. They need to be discussed. The way social hierarchies affect the work and the types of structures that are needed so everyone gets to take part in the conversation. A company that is not organized the traditional way spends a significant amount of time considering the most suitable way to work. It, too, has structures, practices, and principles in place, which may be even more extensive or at least more carefully considered compared to traditional setups. Our community-driven model is the result of years of work. To avoid reinventing the wheel, or organization, works teams have established regular settings and occasions for discussions. Once a month, they take part in a retreat to talk about issues such as what community, a humane approach, or positive work life means to them. A morning gathering takes place on Fridays. Additionally, alternating weeks are for catching up and creating reviews that focus on feedback. Rautanen repeatedly mentions the word pair, "we discuss." But how do you fare in a chatty community if you don't exactly have the gift of gab? Rautanen mentions that discussions on self-leadership and social skills often focus too heavily on the individual, while community perspective is overlooked. I think it's more rewarding to think that community structures can steer each person to develop their own social skills. Structures could entail an organization having an open culture that fosters speaking up, as well as a model for handling difficult situations that everyone knows about. This way, no one ends up alone when a problem arises. According to Rautanen, it is the organization's task to foster people's passion for their work, which requires investing in well-being and ensuring a humane work life. Bengari and Works share the same location. Bengari specializes in Generation Z, assisting companies in enhancing their competitive edge among young consumers. Anu Rautanen also provides mentoring for Bengari's human resources. How do younger generations differ from older ones in terms of social and emotional skills? A generation that doesn't tolerate a culture of silence and hushing is entering the workforce. They are willing to escalate situations and question what they are supposed to do, says Rautanen. Additionally, there are certain differences in work ethos. Typically, those of us born in the 70s are more work-centered and value hard work. For those born in the 90s, life isn't all about work. They can be highly ambitious, yet more discerning about their choice of workplace. According to Veera Kinnunen from Bengari, Generation Z is open, curious, and direct, whether communicating face-to-face or on social media. She mentions that young people have discovered an influential platform and their own voice via social media. They are aware of the opportunity to communicate directly, quickly advancing topics they find meaningful. In its projects, Bengari regularly involves young people as advisors for different companies. For example, they form an advisory board that takes part in validating and brainstorming a communication concept, service, or product. Engaging young people can be applied across different themes and sectors. As Gen Z enters the workforce, they will radically change the way many things are done. This article is part of the Aalto Leaders Insight content series and was first published in the 11th volume of Aalto Leaders Insight magazine in June 2023. More thought-provoking and topical articles, podcasts, and views on leadership, working life, and competence development can be found on our Aalto Leaders Insight website.